Hi, my name is Natalie Gochner. I represent the political middle. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and hi, listeners. Hope you're staying warm and dry out there.
And on the political right, John Dougal.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Don't you love
it? Good to be with you.
I know. Don't you love it? On the year that the Great Salt Lake is getting all this attention for being so low, the snowpack just keeps building and building and building.
Grateful for it.
Yeah. Amen.
It's not going to be enough to fill the lake, though.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. Hey, a lot of interesting things, but I want to talk first about our former president, Jimmy Carter. Entering hospice care, he's 98 years old. Either of you have any personal memories or epiphanies with Jimmy Carter? Anything?
Oh, so no surprise. I'm a Jimmy Carter fan.
Okay.
I have a couple things.
From your Southern days?
Yeah, from my days as being a Southern Democrat. So I would say a couple things stand out to me. One is that one of the things that I always think about, I've talked on the show before, I was a Peace Corps volunteer. Carter's mom joined the Peace Corps at age, I believe, 60. Forget the details. She was in her 60s, 68, 66 years old, and served a full two years in the Peace Corps. And I just think that is incredible. And I just am so grateful for his ongoing work, humanitarian efforts, basically a highly focused work on everything from like ringworm to different kinds of infectious disease across the world. And he talked about initiating a lot of the work that he was doing around global public health, really being inspired by his mom's service. And so that's something that, connects to me as a former Peace Corps volunteer, but also as a person who's just interested in the greater investments in global well-being.
John, longest living president in U.S. history. I have this interesting memory of him. I'm older than the two of you, and I love to study political speeches, but he gave what's the famous called malaise speech.
Put your sweater on.
Yeah, you're in the energy crisis, and he said, turn down the heat and put on a sweater. And that's what prompted Ronald Reagan a few years later to say it's morning in America. We're back.
Yeah.
Anything from you, John?
Well, I mean, I was a young kid remembering the Carter. I mean, I don't really remember Ford Carter election process, but I do remember Carter Reagan and stuff like that, the shifting of the guard. It's interesting to read some of the stories these days about, if you will, the depression that Jimmy Carter felt losing that election and yet bouncing back. And I think he's a model of Christian faith, of putting his faith into action. And you see so many decades of service to improve the life and well-being of his mankind,
Yeah, some good bipartisan love for the former president.
Yeah,
I love it.
I gave him a shout out, I think, on our Thanksgiving episode of being somebody I was grateful for
in that sense. I also believe that he is one person who really has made the Iowa caucus sort of famous for what it was, because he was sort of unknown. They didn't necessarily believe. I think it was Jimmy Carter. And I recently was listening to this, because now the debates around changing the Iowa being the first, that really it was a lot of knocking on doors, shoe leather, that got him to win the Iowa caucus. And so it's interesting also to see, him coming to the end of his life and that process also going through a deep change as well.
Mm-hmm. John, we've got Dominion Voting Systems as part of a court filing in a defamation lawsuit against Fox News. It's a $1.6 billion lawsuit.
There's a lot of money.
There's a lot of emails, texts, and testimonies that reveal the degree to which Fox News was pushing these conspiracy theories, even though they didn't believe them. And some of their star hosts, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, were all named in the filing. Ouch.
So this is one of those things. I mean, clearly they didn't believe the narrative that was getting pitched. But I've said for a long time, these aren't really news stations. This is more about entertainment, talking heads, than it really is about news and stuff. And I think this is shining a light on that, unfortunately.
It's really interesting that a lot of the American public has not figured that out. They think they watch these political performance programs and that it's actually news.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's deeply detrimental to democracy or democratic process. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievably predatory, the way that these messages are crafted, created, and then repeated over and over and over again, I think is leading to what has already been a deep fissure, I think, in our American politic broadly, and the way that people consume and share and think about information, or what even is information. Fox News, I think, is deeply detrimental. Unfortunately, that is not even really the furthest and scariest versions of news that's out there. And a lot of Utahns, unfortunately, are engaging in these.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about it, in the era of big data, they can actually measure whether what they're doing is a performance, political performance art, is actually helping them with ratings and clicks and things. So it makes it even worse. It becomes a self-fulfilling kind of spiral of, hey, if we say this, we'll get more attention. That leads to more revenue. Really dangerous.
Really dangerous. Yep.
Okay, I want to go to Ohio. The Ohio Department of Health is opening a health clinic today for residents of East Palestine. They've reported to health officials all sorts of problems with headaches, sore throats, respiratory problems because of a early February derailment.
Train derailment with those chemicals.
Norfolk Southern train. Boy, the images of that looked haunting. I worked at EPA just for a year. I can't say I had anything quite like this, but I do know that EPA, this is what they do. Man, they have the scientists to measure this. They have the emergency response people to get out and help. So pretty interesting. And it's not looking great for Pete Buttigieg on this.
True. I will say, I guess one of the questions that I have, and I feel like there's been this kind of broader discourse about should FEMA be called out, like all these different questions, what really is the appropriate response? A private company is responsible for this. Mm-hmm. This, you know, train derailment, Norfolk Southern is the train operator, right? Mm-hmm. They made these decisions to burn off these chemicals. Is it the appropriate response? Is the government, both of you, I'm curious mm-hmm. about your opinions on this. Should the government be responding to this, or is this a responsibility of this company?
Mm-hmm. John, there's always this question about when you have a crisis like this, you know, where you need something bigger than just the private sector to figure it out. Who goes? Is it the president? Is it the cabinet secretary? Is it, you know, someone of a division level? I was always taught in public communications, when there's a crisis, you send the top person.
See, and I come from the perspective, send the person who can get the job done. Too mm-hmm. often the top person is there for show and appearances
and
distracts from the
work. Part of getting the job done?
I think they distract too often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't have a problem with Mayor Pete not being there right now. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be a distraction. If the president were there, I think he'd be a distraction. I want the boots on the ground of the folks that can help with the problem. Now, Shireen, to your question, I also come from the perspective of, you know, you should be free to do what you want to do, except when, in this case, chemicals and pollutants are being pushed on everybody else and your neighbors. That's a point at which we have the government and other things to step in to try and remedy that.
So
now, I don't know to
that.
What extent this is also the company deciding to burn it off versus emergency responders and others saying the dangerousness of this necessitates that because there's not a safer way to clean it up.
Sure. I agree with that. I do agree with that. I think there is a point where government intervention is critical, but I also think there's a bigger conversation here. When we hear, or I hear, you know, in particular people on the left kind of hear repeatedly over and over again the need for deregulation, I get concerned when we have incidents like this. And then there is kind of a sense of who really is responsible, what's the extent of their responsibility. There has to be a balance here that really does hold companies accountable for these kinds of disasters and the havoc that they are creating in these communities.
Well, and to let people know, this train, my understanding, was about 2 miles long.
Goodness.
So that is a long train from my perspective.
Yeah. All right.
So this, stopping that thing.
This is a blending of national and local news, but you have, whenever there's a politician that's known by her initials, MTG,
yeah.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, she, you know, tweeted out that we need to have a national divorce and basically separate into red and blue states and make government smaller. Shireen, it prompted a tweet response from our Governor Cox, where he basically said, hey, we don't need a divorce. We need marriage counseling. This is evil speech. A strong response from our governor.
Strong response. So, you know, maybe that has something to do with it, just kind of his general perspective, which on that I would appreciate, right? Like mm-hmm. having that sense. But also when you live in, you know, the governor's mansion, for example, is near a precinct that I live in. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you it's
solidly blue.
It's as blue as some of our districts get, right? So first of all, this is a terrible idea. I do think that it's invoking we're talking about, you know, clicks for attention, right? Mm-hmm. The more inflammatory, the more attention she gets, certainly. But what do you do in a state like Utah, where you have some real deep blue pockets mm-hmm. and a bunch of red places and a lot of places that are in between? This is absolute insanity, and it does not help us address that there are real fundamental issues that government needs to respond to, fix, hopefully be inspirational. This is madness.
John, I'll speak strongly on this. I think it's a plague on the Republican Party that we have people saying these kinds of things that are doing it under the guise of conservative values, Republican values. A little tip for our listeners. Governor Cox is the incoming chair of the National Governor Association. That means in midsummer, he'll take over as chair of this powerful organization of governors. They always pick something to focus on. He's going to select healthy conflict as his focus for that year. I think this tweet foreshadows that. John?
Yeah, I mean, Shireen hit on the points I was also going to make. You look at the red states, and they got deep pockets in various cities and other things like that. And you look at the blue states that have regions of red that wonder what's going on. You go to New York State, and you got people in upstate wondering what's going on in New York City and those type of
and
dynamics.
Honestly,
and so we have it all throughout.
Middle, right?
And lots of people in the middle mm-hmm. and stuff. And so some type of divorce really doesn't solve the issue at all.
Geographically, but, doesn't work.
No.
But
nope.
It's not in the spirit of our founders, and
but,
it certainly doesn't help the world.
But the simple fact is as we've done on here, there are issues that we disagree significantly, mm-hmm. and yet we can dialogue and we can discuss it and we can do it respectfully. And sometimes we change each other's minds a little bit, and other times we walk away and just say we see the world differently, and that is what it is. But we can still be friends, and we can still debate and discuss this stuff and try and find compromise where we can. And respect for different people's opinions where we can. And that's just the nature of our existence.
Yeah,
here in Utah, here in America, and folks that don't recognize that.
Though it, on a weekly basis, often raises my blood pressure, I will say I'm grateful for the conversation. And I do think that our listeners, and I think more broadly, when you can engage with people who disagree with you and do it in a way that is productive, that is even if it's passionate, we are better for it.
Mm-hmm. And if I would say this, if we can't have healthy conflict, we can't solve any of our problems. We got to figure that out.
Yeah.
Hey, in our next segment, we're going to talk about Governor Cox and former President Trump. Stay tuned. I'm Natalie Gochner with John Dougal and Shireen Gurbani.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gurbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Before we jump into the news, I just have to pause for a moment and acknowledge that our capital city did a great job hosting the NBA All-Star Game. Did you guys feel that love?
I have mixed feelings on it.
Okay, let's hear it, because I had just...
I heard it was just boring.
The game was boring, but I've got to tell you,
I mean the nightlife down.
I went to the O.C. Tanner Gift of Music on Friday night and saw Mendelssohn's Elijah perform by the Tabernacle and the Symphony. It was awesome. On Saturday night, I was up in Park City seeing Richard Thompson in concert, a great folk artist. And then the NBA All-Star Game going. I just thought, this is my city.
Yes. So I should say, I had a great weekend. I normally do. I love this city. I did go to the Celebrity Game, which was a real riot. But I have to say, I think part of the marketing for me that feels like a bit of a swing and a miss was that it was like, this will be a great activity for your families. Bring your families downtown. Mm-hmm. There's going to be this exciting event on Gallivan Plaza. There are going to be places to go. I have to tell you, I was down, and it was a gorgeous day. So in the middle of the day, I take my kiddo down. We're at City Creek. We go to Gallivan Plaza. And while there were artists who were trying to kind of activate these spaces, it was free ice skating. It didn't really seem like anyone knew that. There were not that many people ice skating. It felt like they encouraged people to bring kiddos down, but there weren't lawn activities mm-hmm. or things to do. So I think if you were in, there are many cool events and parties and certainly being, in the games or in those spaces. But for example, the Radisson right next to the arena had a giant wall projecting mm-hmm. what was happening inside the arena across from a parking lot filled with buses and cars. So you mm-hmm. couldn't even be in that space to enjoy mm-hmm. it. And I know I'm the only drinker on this episode, but it's a bummer.
I got my water right here.
When you go down and you're ready to hang out and like spend some time, and you can't get a beer. Like there's mm-hmm. not like a
no beer garden.
Yeah, there's no beer garden. There's no like reason to hang out in these spaces. So I would have to say I think we did a nice job in general. There were a lot of cool events and a lot of people were brought in to activate. It was a blacker city than we've seen in a long time. That's cool. It's cool to see the diversity. But man, I feel like we could have done a lot more.
Okay. John, it was a gorgeous day. I mean, we had on Sunday, where the...
And Saturday.
Yeah, both of them in blue sky and clean air. And I was pleased about that.
Good. Yeah, and I'm not a big sports fan. Don't mm-hmm. have enough time in the day for it. And so, I just pretty much went by without me even
noticing. But you are into politics.
And I am in Utah County, so I wasn't in the capital city.
Every month, Governor Cox has a monthly news conference broadcast on KUED. And it was filled this time with questions about Donald Trump. And would the governor support him? If I've got this right, he was asked if he would support Trump should the former president be the party's standard bearer next year. Cox said, quote, "I don't know. I'm really interested in winning back the Senate next year. I'm interested in increasing our margin in the House, and I would really, really like to win the presidency. And I don't think Trump gives us the best chance to do that." Strong words.
Not that strong. Stronger words would be, no, Trump's not the guy. The future is not with Trump. The future was others.
And this is what a Governor Dougal would say. I know you elevating that. But.
But the simple fact is, let's just admit, okay, Trump served a purpose in the past, but he is not the future of the Republican Party. And those that think he is, I'm sorry, I disagree.
Shereen, Senator Romney is saying that Trump is the most likely candidate to win the Republican presidential nomination in 2024.
I think he's right.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the data this weekend. I mean, he's far ahead of everybody else, and
yes.
It's his to have. Yeah. So, well, okay. We got John thinking he should be stronger on that, which is interesting to see. Shereen, the LDS Church has settled a case with the Security and Exchange Commission about their financial reporting. It's a $5 million total settlement, $4 million paid by their advisors, Ensign Peak, and $1 million by the LDS Church itself. Your reaction?
Well, my reaction is I don't have a dog in this fight, really. As members of the faith, I'm wondering how it lands with you. What do you think when you see this kind of news, or how does it feel in what seems to be kind of quite a bit of attention, I think, that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has been getting around its investments and management of money?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know more. I'm not a fan of the SEC, so therefore, I'm somewhat skeptical coming from that perspective.
Mm. Well, I mean, I'll just say that I think transparency is a good thing in financial practices. I'd be curious what you think here, John. I think that anything that moves the LDS faith towards more transparency in its financial practices would be good for the faith, and I'd like to see that, and I think this moves you towards that.
Yeah. Well, when you say transparency, I mean, what does that really mean? Because I come from the perspective of just because somebody wants to know what I'm doing and, well, what are you trying to hide? It's not that I'm trying to hide anything. It's just none of your business what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's a private organization, that doesn't have to disclose its finances, but it's also a faith organization. And so, I don't know where the needle is. I don't know where the right balance is. But I think what this demonstrated is at least you've got to comply with the law. And a settlement suggests that there was something, that they wanted resolved. And then on a moving forward basis, let's look for more disclosure, more transparency. I think that would be good for the faith.
And I come, just coming back, I was not talking about the church. I'm just talking in general, because I've watched politically where people claim transparency, and it's really to stifle competition. It's to stifle opponents. It's to stifle speech. And while I believe in transparency for government, when it comes to private actors, I have a very different perspective.
Shereen, what did you think when you read the news about Utahns who are registering their car in Montana and not paying sales tax? Looks like some clever cross-border kinds of things going on.
You can do that in Oregon too, right?
Yeah, that's right. I feel like South Dakota is also popular for that for some reason, or maybe that's just filing in general. So not good. Don't like it. I want to see people investing back in their communities. I think that we should all have to pay our fair share, and maybe we'll talk about electric vehicles here in a moment. But
John, the enforcement mechanism here is right. You have to register here eventually.
Well,
you pay a use tax if you bought it somewhere else and you're registering it here. Am I getting that right?
Well, in theory, but if you quote unquote buy it there, register it there, and don't pay the tax, and you go for a while. I mean, the penalty last I knew was $2,000 if they caught you with your car being improperly registered. So mm-hmm. It's a sizable penalty. But the question is, how often is that enforced? And with so many students and other folks like that visiting, what's the likelihood of actually getting caught? But, mm-hmm. This was one of the things, I grew up in Oregon. And so some people would license their cars from Utah and Oregon because of the lack of sales tax up there.
Yeah.
But it also gets to tax policy. Why are taxes so high that people go to certain efforts to avoid it? And what can we do to reduce that barrier? Because, the lower the tax rate, the more compliance
folks have, the less
need to avoid.
So on the tax policy question, Shereen, we'll stay here for a minute, and I'll just ask John first. But
sure.
We've got this movement that is definitely gaining ground to get rid of the food tax, at least the state portion of the food tax in our state, if we will get rid of the constitutional requirement that the income tax is earmarked to education. Looks like they're going to push this out to the people. John, let's get your comment first. And as I pass it to you, I will just say that usually I don't like combining things like this. I like them to stand on their own merits. But there is a good reason to connect these, because the reason we like the food tax is it helps with volatility because it's so constant.
With the food tax, you have less volatility, more stability in the sales tax.
Yeah, and one of the ways we deal with volatility is if you have more flexibility with the income tax. And so there's a reason, a public finance reason, why you would move these together.
Yeah, the simple fact is, while we have the earmark on income tax to earmark it for historically public ed and then higher ed and now other social services in a limited basis, it's one of those things where the legislatures can still technically work around it. They can lower the income tax rate, raise the sales tax rate, do other things like that to move money around outside the earmark and still comply with the Constitution. This just gives more budgeting flexibility to the legislature to have, if you will, one pot of money, the general fund, and be able to prioritize it as they see appropriate. And the simple fact is, education, especially public ed, will still take the lion's share of that money just because that is such a major focus and importance to the citizens.
We've got to pull Shireen in here, but John, just one follow-up. Is the income tax earmark a mirage?
Pseudo-mirage.
So what I'm saying there is we think it helps public education, but there's so many ways to work around it that it's probably not as big of a deal as we think.
If it helped public education, would it be second to last in the nation for per pupil spending? I mean, like, let's get real, right? Yeah. So I think the thing that I don't like is, I think as you suggested, I don't like that we continue to see these things that are either in seriousness detrimental to public education or not, we can have that debate, but tied to something else. Mm-hmm. I would like for us to be moving these forward one at a time, and let's have the debate on the merits of that particular issue and move that. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to do that because I think that we kind of exist in a system that seems to benefit from sort of a hostage crisis, right? Mm-hmm. We'll pull in this thing that you want, but we're going to get this thing that we want. I don't think that's good politics. I don't think that's, you know, it's not the kind of leadership that I am inspired by, but I understand the desire to do this for expediency and because mm-hmm. it feels like that's a way to get it done.
From the political middle, I will be really challenged on how I would vote on something like this. Mm-hmm. And as someone who studies public finance.
If you're a legislator or as a citizen?
As a citizen. But I will say that I've been really encouraged by recent legislative leadership who had made a commitment to fund growth and cover inflation.
Yeah.
And they've held to that.
That's important.
It's a big deal. The problem is they can't commit future legislators and legislatures to that. And so
And they can't control the economy.
Right.
Yeah. And so I've been in situations, Shireen, where, you know, the business community wants the legislature to fund growth, but we're in a recession and they just can't figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
So it's hard. It's hard. John, what do you think we're going to see on the tax cut? $400 million, is that the number they're saying?
Somewhere around that is what I'm hearing. Clearly, you're going to see a cut in the rate of the income tax. What I'm hearing is dropping from 4.85 down to 4.65. Now,
it's being criticized because it's a bigger tax cut to the rich. Your response to that?
Well, I just think getting that rate down, when we look at our neighboring states, when we dropped it to 5, you know, we stuck out like a sore thumb because before that we were at 7. And we're seeing neighboring states dropping their rates. And so we need to be competitive. We need to drop the rate. I'm a fan of the flat tax. Mm-hmm. I would go pure flat if I could. But we're not there.
Yeah.
And so and the simple fact is anyone who pays income tax gets a tax cut in this proposal. But, yeah, I am a fan of cutting the rate.
Yeah.
So as you're saying, this is a proposal that benefits top earners. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I think that we can be doing more to prioritize those who have less, and I would like to see a politics that does that.
Mm, yeah. Shireen, staying with you, some clean air bills. What do you see in this Representative Doug Owens? He's a Democrat from Mill Creek. He wants to beef up the monitoring of the impacts of Great Salt Lake's dust.
So this is going to be critical, especially as we see the we might not see it recede quite as much this year because of our good snowpack. But again, as we said at the beginning of the show, what we have now is not going to fill the Great Salt Lake. The dust coming off of that lake is really detrimental to people's health. Broadly, breathing it is not good. It's got a lot of it was described as a, you know, mm-hmm. bomb in our backyard. So this is not healthy to breathe. Getting the monitoring in place and really understanding the impacts of that, we're probably behind on this. So I'm glad to see it moving forward. Mm-hmm.
John, did you see the move that Representative Gaylynn Bennion, a Democrat from Cottonwood Heights, she wants to give renters 90 days notice before a rent increase of 10% or $100 takes effect? month-to-month rental agreements would be excluded. Thoughts on that one? I'm just sort of like, notice is one thing, but it's still coming.
Well, we saw it, from my perspective, too many issues when it came to rental control and other things like that and through COVID. And when the legislature gets in here, I think they cause all sorts of other ramifications, reluctance to start renting to folks and other problems like that.
Mm-hmm. We have one of the most generous states to landlords, so I think we could see some reform in this area.
Well, that's a wrap. We'll end it there. This is Both Sides of the Aisle with Shireen Gourbani, John Dougal, and Natalie Gochner. Program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.